Okay, welcome back to episode 152, I believe. Am I correct?
Yes, I believe you are correct.
152. Today, there's been some developments, of course, with this ongoing coronavirus crisis or scamdemic rather, or operation, whatever you want to call it. There's been some positive signals this week. It's frustrating because, really, given the state of the economy and the damage that's being done, these frustrating gradual reemergence of the economy that's being allowed by the governors and local authorities simply isn't enough. But nevertheless, there is a ruling in Ohio. A county judge on the shores of Lake Erie ruled Wednesday that Ohio has overstepped its authority in closing gyms and fitness centers for 2 months in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, in ordering an injunction that immediately allows gyms and health clubs to reopen. The Lake County Common Pleas Court Judge Eugene Lucci criticized Ohio Department of Health Director Dr. Amy Acton. In his ruling, Lucci said Ohio law allowed Acton to isolate sick people and quarantine people exposed to illness during the incubation period for a disease, about 14 days in the case of the coronavirus. Acton and Ohio Governor Mike DeWine cited authority under Ohio Revised Code 3701.13 in ordering a statewide shutdown March 24th of non-essential businesses, including gyms and fitness centers. Lucci said state leaders went too far. Lake County Common Pleas Court Judge Eugene Lucci said the director has quarantined the entire people of the state of Ohio for more than 14 days. The director has no statutory authority to close all businesses, which he deems non-essential, for a period of 2 months, L wrote Lucci, a Republican who has been a Common Pleas Court judge since 2001. I guess Miss Acton doesn't understand that. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's what, of course, Lord Acton said. I don't know if she's any relation to the late Lord Acton, but of course, out in your part of the world, Gavin Newsom, there is the United States Justice Department has sent him a warning, which I guess is a good sign, all things considered. After receiving a formal warning from the United States Justice Department over church closures, California Governor Gavin Newsom said the state is weeks away from allowing in-person religious services to resume. A group of federal attorneys wrote a letter to Newsom warning him that prolonged church closures likely violate the free exercise clause of the First Amendment due to the fact that similar non-religious businesses are receiving the green light to reopen on stage two. Laws do not treat religious activities equally with the comparable non-religious activities are subject to heightened scrutiny under the free exercise clause of the First Amendment, the letter states. Laws that are not both neutral toward religion and generally applicable are invalid unless the government can prove that they further a compelling interest and are pursued through at least the least restrictive means possible. Religious gatherings may not be singled out for unequal treatment compared to other non-religious gatherings that have the same effect on the government's public health interests, absent most compelling reasons. The letter states that while the initial shelter-in-place order likely passed a strict scrutiny standard, continuing to not to allow churches to reopen in stage two under the new physical distancing requirements, along with other retail businesses, restaurants, and certain office spaces, is a form of unconstitutional religious discrimination. On Thursday, Newsom told MSNBC's Stephanie Ruhle that worshipers will be allowed back inside churches within weeks. Well, thank you, Governor. I have a deep faith and a devotion to our churches. I grew up in the church and went to a Jesuit university. Well, that explains it. No. Anyway, I have deep reverence for congregants and parishioners that want to reconnect with the community and their faith and able to practice accordingly, Newsom said. We're just weeks away from meaningful modification that allow just that to happen. The few weeks timeline Newsom appears to be referring to is stage three of his reopening plan, which allows for the return of high-risk business such as gyms, hair salons, and other personal care services. Churches have always been classified as stage three business. It's interesting. And Newsom stated Monday he believes that states will move into stage three in early June. So it is unclear if the Justice Department will pursue legal action against the state. More than 1,200 California pastors have pledged to resume in-person services on May 31st in defiance of the current shelter-in-place order. During a press conference Friday, President Donald Trump called on governors to classify houses of worship as essential businesses. So he's coming out in support of that. That's his position now. Donald Trump himself had was going back and forth with the Attorney General of Michigan, Dana Nessel, who I believe is a lesbian. I don't know if that's relevant. I think it is somewhat because the confused nature of her thinking. And of course, she's the Attorney General for Governor Whitmore out there. And she apparently, Donald Trump went out to Michigan, and there's a controversy whether he'd put a mask on her. And she said, in order for him to be allowed in the state, he'd have to wear a mask. He put on a mask at a Michigan plant, I think it was a Ford plant, then took it off so the media couldn't see. He didn't want to give them the pleasure of seeing with the mask on. Of course, this whole mask thing is ridiculous. I believe there were no less than 3 announcements from the CDC between February and June. It might have been the World Health Organization that wearing masks is not advisable. It's pretty obvious. I mean, let's masks impair or inhibit breathing. You take in more CO2. You don't exhale toxins. There's also the issue of the particulate matter you're breathing in if you're wearing a mask for a long period of time. It doesn't really prevent anything from getting through to the mask. It's ridiculous. The mask itself is a fomite, as they say, because you're constantly playing with it, touching it. It's ridiculous. It's an act of public subservience, to the diktat. It's almost a fetish. It's weird because we've seen the theatrics of the mask kick in late April and May, whereas from late February to March into April, no public officials were wearing a mask. And even now, Governor Cuomo doesn't wear it. Gavin Newsom isn't wearing a mask, nor is Governor Whitmore. Apparently, Donald Trump's mask had the presidential seal on it, which I think was funny. And so, I mean, so it's silly because it's one of these things we've talked about, the symbolism of wearing a mask, what it depersonalizes, dehumanizes people, and it humiliates. And a lot of the stuff is about humiliation. I think I wrote you an email about Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania, and how his public health administrator out there is this Rachel Levine, who's a man who identifies as a woman. And I asked, why would be subjected to government officials who suffer from such delusional narcissism? And this doesn't even have a grasp on reality, yet he's affecting or implementing public policy. But this is the world we live in. It's all about humiliation, isn't it? I mean, it's just nonsense. All this continuing lockdown stuff. I mean, we were told that we had the shelter in place, had to lock the economy down to flatten the curve. And now we're being told that we have to get rid of the curve, defeat the virus, and in order for us to reemerge, we have to be subjected to constant testing, contact tracing, which is 24/7, 365 surveillance. So they keep moving the goalposts, and it's clearly what's clearly presented itself here is they're trying to implement sort of a technocratic slave state as a condition for us being able to go out and earn a living, which is ridiculous. It's a complete violation of our civil liberties and the Constitution, and they have no power to do this. Yet this is being conducted, and I think with NGOs and corporations in conjunction with businesses and with state governments and even the federal government. This fetish of testing, where they can't even provide a reliable test. There's all sorts of problems with false positive with the test. The testing process itself creates a positive result if you get into how they test for these things. Not to mention the fact the issue of even identifying the virus. They've never purified it or isolated it. So there's a controversy there. That's interesting in of itself. Last week, and I think I sent this to you. You got the Catholic Church. Some cardinals signed what they call an appeal for the church and the world to Catholics and all people of goodwill. And this was signed by 3 cardinals, and many others. But initially, it was signed by 3 cardinals, and one was the person. I guess the chief author of it is this Cardinal Vigano, who is a sort of a traditionalist within Rome. He appears to be fighting sort of the Freemasonic infiltration of the Vatican itself. He's sort of this rearguard action against these evil forces that have apparently infiltrated the church. and have made it a tool of in many cases a tool of globalism. But anyway, do you mind if I read the appeal to you and you get your reaction to it?
Then we no, can... please. It's great to get that information out. Yeah.
Okay. So appeal for the church and the world. I'm going to pull out some selective quotes. I urge people to go on the web and read the entire document. It's not a long document, so I'm just going to. There's some great points brought up here, and it appears that Vigano is a fellow traveler with us, so Cardinal Vigano. The facts have shown that under the pretext of COVID-19 epidemic, the inalienable rights of citizens have in many cases been violated, and their fundamental freedoms, including exercise of freedom of worship, expression, and movement, have been disproportionately and unjustifiably restricted. Public health must not and cannot become an alibi for infringing on the rights of millions of people around the world, let alone for depriving the civil authority of its duty to act wisely for the common good. This is particularly true as growing doubts emerge from several quarters about the actual contagiousness, danger, and resistance of the virus. Many authoritative voices in the world of science and medicine confirm that the media's alarmism about COVID-19 appears to be absolutely unjustified. We have reason to believe, on the basis of official data on the incidence of the epidemic as related to the number of deaths, that there are powers interested in creating panic among the public's world population with the sole aim of permanently imposing unacceptable forms of restrictions on freedoms, of controlling people, and of tracking their movements. The imposition of these illiberal measures is a disturbing prelude to a realization of a world government beyond all control. We also believe that in some situations, the containment measures that were adopted, including the closure of shops and businesses, have precipitated a crisis that has brought down entire sectors of the economy. This encourages interference by foreign powers and has serious social and political repercussions. It continues, the criminalization of personal and social relationships must likewise be judged as an unacceptable part of the plan of those who advocate isolating individuals in order to better manipulate and control them. We ask the scientific community to be vigilant so that cures for COVID-19 are offered in honesty for the common good. Every effort must be made to ensure that shady business interests do not influence the choices made by government leaders and international bodies. It is unreasonable to penalize those remedies that have proved to be effective and are often inexpensive just because one wishes to give priority to treatments or vaccines that are not as good, but which guarantee pharmaceutical companies far greater profits and exacerbate public health expenditure. Let us also remember, as pastors, that for Catholics, it is morally unacceptable to develop or use vaccines derived from material from aborted fetuses. We also ask government leaders to ensure that forms of control over people, whether through tracking systems or any other form of location finding, are rigorously avoided. The fight against COVID-19, however serious, must not be a pretext for supporting the hidden intentions of supranational bodies that have very strong commercial and political interests in this plan. In particular, citizens must be given opportunity to refuse these restrictions on personal freedom without any penalty whatsoever being imposed on them who do not wish to use vaccines, contact tracing, or any other similar tool. Let us also consider the blatant contradiction of those who pursue policies of drastic population control and at the same time present themselves as the savior of humanity without any political or social legitimacy. Finally, the political responsibility of those who represent the people can in no way be left to experts, who can indeed claim a kind of immunity from prosecution, which is disturbing to say the least. We strongly urge those in the media to commit themselves to providing accurate information and not penalizing dissent by resorting to forms of censorship, as is happening widely on social media, in the press, and on television. A democratic and honest debate is the best antidote to the risk of imposing subtle forms of dictatorship, presumably worse than our society has seen arise and fall in recent past. Finally, as pastors responsible for the flock of Christ, let us remember that the Church firmly asserts her autonomy to govern, worship, and teach. This autonomy and freedom are an innate right that our Lord Jesus Christ has given her for pursuit of her proper ends. For this reason, as pastors, we finally assert the right to decide autonomously on the celebration of the Mass and the sacraments, just as we claim absolute autonomy in matters falling with our immediate jurisdiction, such as liturgical norms and ways of administering communion and the sacraments. The state has no right to interfere for any reason whatsoever in the sovereignty of the church. Ecclesiastical authorities have never refused to collaborate with the state, but such collaboration does not authorize civil authorities to impose any sort of ban or restriction on public worship or the exercise of priestly ministry. The civil duties to which citizens are bound imply the state's recognition of their rights. We are called to assess the current situation in a way consistent with the teaching of the gospel. This means taking a stand, either with Christ or against Christ. Let us not be intimidated or frightened by those who would have us believe that we are a minority. Good is much more widespread and powerful than the world would have us believe. We are fighting against an invisible enemy that seeks to divide citizens, to separate children from their parents, grandchildren from their grandparents, the faithful from their pastors, students from teachers, customers from vendors. Let us not allow centuries of Christian civilization to be erased under the pretext of a virus and an odious technological tyranny to be established in which nameless and faceless people can decide the fate of the world by confining us to a virtual reality. If this is the plan to which the powers of this earth intend to make us yield, know that Jesus Christ, King and Lord of history, has promised the gates of hell shall not prevail. With faith, let us beseech the Lord to protect the church and the world. May the Blessed Virgin help Christians crush the head of the ancient serpent and defeat the plans of the children of darkness. Signed by Archbishop Cardinal Mario Vergano, Cardinal Gerhard Ludwig Mueller, and Cardinal Joseph Zekun, Bishop Emeritus of Hong Kong. So, Joe.
Well, what do you have to say? The Catholic cardinals finally... that actually, a lot of that declaration would have been great for a secular, you know, political type in the United States to have read, mm-hmm. because, you know, it actually did go into specifically the inalienable rights. And I, you know, thinking about all the statements that our political types have made, I haven't heard one that's really that clear, that articulate. So, you know, I'm glad that they did it. I hope that it inspires, you know, kind of a more unified response against the lockdown by the Catholics in the United States. I mean, they shouldn't permit this idea of we're going to open the religion back up. You know, they've done that with the economy. They've got the public to believe this is an acceptable process, even though it's clearly not. Clearly unconstitutional, but in terms of religion, it's just abhorrent. It's basically Satanism unleashed. You know, the idea that, well, you know, we're going to open the churches back up at a certain point. I mean, because it gives government this, you know, the idea that, you know, religion is a toy. It's just one of the government apparatuses for social control, and which, of course, you know, that's how they look at it. But it's just that the people who are faithful should, you know, have the courage to really dig in here and fight against that. And I'm glad the Cardinals, you know, made the statement.
Yeah, they're treating religion like Major League Baseball or NBA or something, and it's not. And it's really, it should be treated as something that's co-equal and a check on the state. And that's something that hasn't really perdured or in the West, you know, in the past couple centuries. And this is a weakness of the church. And, you know, it's, you know, in a way, although the church appeals to, you know, liberal ideas of individual freedom, in the end of the day, individual freedom is vindicated by, you know, sort of these institutions, which aren't democratic in many ways. These are institutions that transcend and precede the state, outside the state. And again, this is something that I think we presumed that existed, but the church in the past couple of centuries has been so weakened in the state, has become subservient to it. And that's part of the problem is the church has let itself become weak and just being too helpful, you know. But it's refreshing to hear that type of voice coming from Rome. And again, you're right. The idea that it's just in the fact that Governor Newsom could take the position that we'll be doing it in a couple of weeks, as if he ever had the authority to do that. He never did have the authority to do that. It's illegitimate. Same way how they've changed, like my opening remarks, how they've keep moving the goalposts and reopening the economy. that, you know, now it's you have this ridiculous standard where there must be no risk at all. And they've created, you know, along with the media and government officials, they've created such a, they've frightened so many people that just the psychological effect of the crisis, which, you know, I my position effectively, there is no there, but they've a good half of the population is simply too frightened to go out and emerge from their houses and engage in everyday commerce and intercourse, which the economy relies upon. You have this psychological effect. And you have this, like I said, these painful gradual reopenings, which, you know, it just isn't enough, nowhere near enough. And they've locked everything, shut everything down. And just the physical damage that that's done to the economy, not to mention the psychological effect. That's why
my opinion, this is all part of the plan. They have a really good numerical understanding of the economy, and they know how long they have to hold it underwater to, at the point they release it, have it not be able to be revived. And I think that's really what they've done, is they've ended the existence of enough small businesses. And I've been tracking it here in our local area, because there are different ways, you know, that people are declaring that they're not going to open up. Small businesses are like just saying, look, we're quitting. And so I don't know what exactly how their arithmetic worked, but I'm sure that if you lost like 25% of the small businesses forever, that would be enough of a hole in the economy to never have it really, you know, get back up to full strength. It couldn't, because, you know, that is the employment engine of America, small businesses. You know, that's where you get the people having jobs. And so since this is social control, that's really the goal, right? They want to have a situation where there are just millions of people without work that will be slaves to the state. And then they'll be in a position where they'll have to take the vaccine. They'll have to permit contact tracing, you know, just in order to get the check that they need in order to buy the corn chips. So, you know, it's a well thought out and just incredibly evil attack upon, you know, Europeans and everyone else on the planet. I mean, it's, you know, we'll talk about it later on, I guess, when we go into this character, Larry Brilliant. You know, I'm afraid that basically at this point, they've actually succeeded. In other words, I think they've already destroyed enough small businesses so that when it comes back up, you're really not going to have enough economic activity. Because, you know, Tim, I mean, the small businesses are very interrelated in their economy. In other words, if a waitress and a bartender are no longer, you know, there to have income, then the small store that sells, you know, bicycle parts to these guys, it doesn't have the stream of economic activity that it needs then to go on. And so this whole thing is, the whole small business economy is really the target of this, and it's just really in horrible shape. So, you know, it'll be a challenge when we are actually, they enable us to start our lives again, to you know, see if we can actually have enough power among the citizens to get the businesses rolling. I think that it's going to be very difficult, and I think that the silver lining is that you know, we mentioned last week, the operation against the people is so, at this point, getting more and more clear. I mean, the letter from the cardinals, I think, was illustrative, you know, because it's pretty obvious what they're talking about. I mean, they're talking about a conspiracy against humanity, right? That's really what the bottom line of that statement was. So, you know, we just have to keep pushing and demanding more and more opening up. Every time, even if it's just appearance that, you know, the political types have been pushed into allowing ending the lockdown, this is really beneficial because it creates psychological strength in the public, so that you know, if they have a wave two coronavirus, that will be stronger, and you know, having believed that we had some success the first time with protest and defiant civil disobedience. So maybe that'll be even a larger, faster wave the next time. So let's hope, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall mortality rate in the United States is 2% below that it was last year. I saw that statistic the other day. And, you know, you talk about a second wave. Well, I'm disputing whether there was a first wave, you know, earlier in the week, I interviewed Kevin Barrett. He made the point that when he was doing his 9/11 activism, that a lot of the support for his activism and the events they had were sponsored by local businesses. In fact, most of it was, all of it was. And so this is one way you can crush dissent by economic repression. And so you get political repression through economic repression. You grind everyone down and, you know, passing $3 trillion relief bills, sending people checks, doesn't revive the economy because it just adds more debt. And it actually gets us further to the destruction of the U.S. dollar and probably ultimately currency, because we've talked about how, you know, obviously you can see the sort of the introduction, the use of artificial intelligence and monitoring social credit system that they have in China. This is an attempt to sort of this crisis is a pretext and excuse for reordering the world economy and imposing a system where people have no autonomy whatsoever. They have social credits and they have to behave a certain way. They have to comply or they'll be locked out. And, you know, so yeah, it was refreshing to hear that letter come out of Rome. And, you know, just an example, just right now, you know, the Memorial Day weekend, this is supposed to be the opening of the beaches and, you know, on the various coasts and particularly on the East Coast. And all the businesses are being subjected to these restrictions. They're not opening. And these businesses rely on, you know, their capacity to operate. And, you know, they say you can open, but you can't have more than a few people in there. The whole imposition of social distancing, which is actually bad public health. All this cleaning and all the social distancing, what they're doing is actually exposing people to more toxic chemicals. It's depriving their immune. We've talked about this, how people have to have their immune system engaged. They have to go outside, rub up against people, and, you know, just how nature handles these things. But they've created this idea where you have to hide from the germs. And this is sort of this weaponization of the germ theory, which is really, as you've looked at the germ theory, it's a warfare model where basically we're at odds with nature, even though we are part of nature. And our immune system has to be constantly protected by an army of medical professionals and experts that give us, you know, periodic injections and these things, which simply isn't true. And in fact, the advice that they're offering is it's malpractice, and it's not only is it medical malpractice, it's political malpractice, and it's malicious. You know, because the social distance thing is going to actually lead to greater vulnerability, because our immune system has to be constantly engaged to handle these things, the microorganisms, which are 99% beneficial. You know, that's another thing, is constant cleaning is actually bad for you. And but yet they're doing this, not to mention the social distancing thing is also given the pretext to turn schools further into prisons and where kids are isolated. We've talked about that, how they imagine playgrounds where kids are 6 feet apart, not engaging, not playing. They're constantly monitored and they're directed where to go. This is just insane. It's on its face insane. It's pretty it should be pretty obvious to everybody, except for the most, you know, I guess, obedient order follower. But nevertheless, you see still some people running around in masks in these things. So there's that.
Well, I just wanted to interject that, you know, people have wondered about social distancing. What's the science in back of it?
Oh, yeah.
And actually, there is an amazing origin to it, which, of course, is, you know, suspicious. But here is the fact that George W. Bush is actually the one who put it in basically into a federal guideline, one of his pandemic positions that they created. And when asked where it comes from, Bush said that it was a 14-year-old girl science project, Laura Glass, who took third place in the Intel Fair in Annapolis, and that this was in the library in the summer of 2005 that Bush was evidently shown this idea. And I mean, this is actually reported in the New York Times that this is where there, where it came from. Now, you know, it could be just an anecdote. I don't know, but there isn't any like history of science about social distancing. I mean, this is just, you know, there's some self-evident aspect to it, but in general, the idea that you could, you know, what kind of benefit versus damage you get with this kind of thing has never been, you know, no one's ever actually gone through it all. So this appears to be, like the New York Times, I think, is correct that basically it's a science project of a 14-year-old girl that George W. Bush evidently came across. And so anyway, that's it's kind of a sad comment on like the entire world accepting such a thing. You know, this goes to the idea of like how weak citizenry is. You know, you talked about how weak the Catholic Church is. Parallel to that is the weakness of the citizen. I mean, you know, we should have been where we are now in terms of resistance at the very beginning. Instead, the citizen was frightened, you know, by the horror porn, didn't have the correct response right off the bat. The thing that we need to do here is learn from this, and so that the next time that they attempt to ratchet up the technologic slave state with another virus, that there's more rebellion and more resistance immediately.
Yeah, and which is my call for a general house cleaning. Any public official, elected, unelected, any prelate, any bishop who advanced this agenda, who didn't question it, you know, either was involved in it maliciously or gullibly advanced it, really should resign and, you know, made to go, I don't know, some form of labor rectification or something where they do penance for the damage they've done. And they're continuing to do. That's why this whole idea of social distancing, which origin of which is what looks like a 14-year-old girl, you know, needs to be completely discredited because commerce, social interaction, the normal everyday life simply cannot function under those terms. And that's the thing. That's why this is all BS.
You know, exactly right. Is that what they've done is they said you can reopen, but under terms under which business cannot succeed.
Yes.
So, you know, but it's, you see how clever it is. You can see how clever it is. That,
I mean,
you know, they're saying, well, you can reopen, but like as a restaurant, you have to have all the tables have to be more than 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
Right. That's going to work. So this is, they're aware of this, for heaven's sakes. And they also, you know, so you can see it. This is the destruction of business is not an accidental aspect. It's the, it is the intent of this whole, you know, coronavirus scam. It is to destroy the power of the free citizen, which to a large extent resided with these small businesses that they own. Big businesses, corporate, satanic businesses like Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, I mean, they're untouched, right? They're the final survivor of this because they're part of the technologic slave state, right? So when you see Facebook and Google and you see the relationship between those organizations and contact tracing, I mean, isn't it clear what you're dealing with, right? These surviving mega corporations, which are all technologic, were just designed and built as components of the technologic slave state from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, went into how fake a person Bill Gates was. And I guess we were going to talk about this Larry Brilliant guy today. Another lifetime actor, another individual who was set up, you know, as an icon. And he's really, really important to understand because he is basically one of the key kind of historical movers of the whole technologic vaccine, contact tracing, AI surveillance. He is really, you know, just he was involved in all of that. So he's a good person to understand.
Yeah. What got me onto this, there was a video posted at BitChute by Devin Stack. He has a page, Black Pilled is his page. And he gets this entitled viral video, and it's focuses on some movies that have, you know, that have talked about pandemics caused by viruses. And this particular one, he did The Contagion, which was a 2011 film. And he kind of he covers the striking resemblance that the you know, the plot line in Contagion has to the COVID-19 so-called pandemic. And then he asks the questions, why are there so many films about pandemics? He talks about the 1980 movie Virus, which is a collaboration between Hollywood and Japan, a pretty big budget movie for its day. Of course, there's the Outbreak movie, 1995, with Dustin Hoffman, Morgan Freeman, Donald Sutherland, and Kevin Spacey. And then, of course, then the Contagion movie, 2011, with sort of an ensemble cast, Lawrence Fishburne, Matt Damon, Molly Cotillard, and one of the talks about how this movie kind of presents the boogeyman, the virus becomes the boogeyman, how in this, you know, during the Cold War, it was communism, the Soviet Union, then that ended, and then there's the war on terror. Now it's viruses and pandemics. But he goes into who consulted the making of this movie. And the movie itself was directed by Steven Soderbergh. Yeah, Bryan Cranston, Kate Winslet, Gwyneth Paltrow, Lawrence Fishburne, Jude Law. It was a high-budget, well-produced movie in many respects. The plot concerns the spread of a virus transmitted by respiratory droplets and fomites, attempts by medical researchers and public health officials to identify and contain the virus, and of course, the loss of social order in the pandemic and the introduction of vaccine, heroic introduction of vaccine to halt the spread that saves the day. And I guess it was the collaboration of Steven Soderbergh and Scott S. Burns, and they decided to make the film depicting a rapid spread of a virus. They were inspired by the 2002-2004 SARS outbreak and 2009 flu pandemic, which were kind of duds, which is interesting in itself. Burns consulted representatives of the World Health Organization, as well as medical experts such as William Ian Lipkin and Lawrence Larry Bruant. The movie premiered in September 2011. Actually, I saw it when it came out. It was well received by scientists who lauded its accuracy. The film has, of course, received renewed popularity because of the pandemic. So did you see the film, Joe?
No.
Okay. It's about 2 hours. It's you'll watch it. It's very interesting because what it does is Derek Stack, Devin Stack rather, talks about how it portrays, you know, internet people as being slimy, untrustworthy conspiracy theorists, heroic CDC, and it points out that the movie itself came on the heels of the 2009 swine flu pandemic scandal. And so it points out that the movie was largely a PR move by the CDC, the World Health Organization, to revive the reputation. Because I think there was a poll conducted in Canada and the United States where more than 50% thought the swine flu epidemic was overblown. And so this movie is there to resuscitate the reputation of these organizations, which were smeared. I mean, they were justifiably smeared actually, because they were shown to be engaged in a mass fraud of the public in order to boost vaccine sales. And there was a kickback scheme with the World Health Organization, and scientists that worked with the World Health Organization had direct connections to Big Pharma. I think it was GlaxoSmithKline was involved in this, where, you know, the announcement of a pandemic immediately require the government purchase of billions of dollars worth of vaccines. And this is despite the fact that the CDC was exposed as giving up on counting the swine flu cases because there simply weren't that many, or any for that matter. This also goes into the debate of what's the origin of swine flu anyway. Is it viral or is it toxic? That's a whole other debate about this stuff. But this movie had interesting timing. And of course, its consultant was Larry Bruant. And I guess you did some research in his background, correct?
I did indeed.
Okay.
Yeah, Larry Bruant is, just in my opinion, just critical for citizens to understand, because he is, you know, to such a large extent, he had both the promotion of the vaccine and the creation of the AI surveillance internet process. I mean, he did both of those simultaneously. And so he's unusual in that regard. You know, he was promoting both sides of the technologic slave state with both, you know, he So I looked into his background, and the first thing that I would point out is that he became famous at a very early age because of the Alcatraz Indian takeover in early 70s. And somehow he became a doctor, you know, that was like helping these people deliver a child. And moreover, he became like a media star. And this is what I think is absolutely critical, because I just wanted to just go through how you can see how that he's an obvious lifetime actor. And the first thing about Larry Brilliant you have to understand is what is his origins. And even though he comes into the media he was a doctor in San Francisco who somehow got involved with this Indian uprising and takeover of Alcatraz. But in fact, he has a background into MKUltra. And that's really the first thing I think people have to recognize, is this has all been hidden. This isn't something that you have to do digging to see it. But before he was in San Francisco, he was at Wayne State. That's where he actually got his MD. And at Wayne State has been identified as one of the MKUltra hospitals. He was at Wayne State Hospital and as part of the university system there. And while he was there, he developed a relationship and an alliance with Paul Loewinger. And this is how he was, I'm sure, recruited, because Loewinger was MKUltra. He, in 1954, which is when the MKUltra LSD, experiments took place, Loewinger admitted later on that he had actually conducted the experiments. I'm not sure. I couldn't find Loewinger being, ID'd as an MKUltra doctor, but he is ID'd as the controller of the LSD experiments that took place in 1954 at Wayne State, which were funded by MKUltra. So I think that's about all you need to know about him. Now, when Brilliant showed up, somehow they got together, he and Loewinger, and they actually wrote a joint letter, which is fascinating. It basically looks like a recruitment letter. They talk about the need for a anti-textbook and an anti kind of medical, looking for progressive people. And they're looking, it's kind of a recruitment. He says, we are therefore actively soliciting ideas for this book for authors that have the same radical perspective that we do. So they wrote this letter together showing, that Loewinger and Brilliant are basically operating out of the same perspective. The fact that Loewinger is clearly identified, and 1954 LSD experiment overseers at Wayne State is 100% MKUltra. So this is where Brilliant comes from. Now he gets to San Francisco, and very shortly he becomes a he becomes the doctor of the Indian uprising. Now, even though the Indians were extremely well organized and actually had a radio show, one of them was an attorney, one of the lawyer, one of the Indians had a legal background, and they had spokesperson. For some reason, the media contacts or wants to talk to the doctor. And I mean, this is sort of like, Gloria Steinem. I mean, all the emergences of the lifetime actors is always, you have this incoherent kind of aspect. I mean, one of the ones I've talked about in the past is how Ken Kesey, ends up with, his name is escaping me right now, the Stuart Brand. And the story is that Brand says that, well, I had done a photo essay on the American Indian, and Kesey had written about an American Indian. Right. So that was how they got together somehow. They had this background in the American Indian, and that was like this relationship blossoms because of it. Anyway, it seems, you know, in hindsight, very suspicious, particularly, you know, when you look into Stuart Brand and look into Keyes. It's obviously artificial. Well, with Larry Brilliant, you know, in an interview, he said, they asked him, he says, well, why did the media focus on you? And he says, well, they asked me, what did the Indians want? And, you know, I'd never met an Indian until 3 weeks earlier. And the interviewer goes, right, you're their spokesman all of a sudden. And Larry goes, yeah, of course, no white kid from Detroit, Michigan could possibly carry that load. But Warner Brothers and some friends saw me on television. And the next day, I got asked to join a movie caravan playing the role of a young doctor in a movie that Warner Brothers was making, kind of like a sequel to Woodstock. A bunch of hippies do rock and roll music. They wanted a rock doc. Now, so this is, this is like one of these ludicrous Hollywood stars.
Well, he fit the suit.
Right. But now, bear in mind that the name of the movie is Medicine Ball Caravan. And you know what a medicine ball is, Tim? I bet you don't. A medicine ball is a peyote button.
Oh, okay. Drugs. Okay. There
right.
You go. Okay.
So medicine ball, but notice it's the Indian, see? It's just like the Indian. Remember we talked about the archaic revival and how
this is like the electric Kool-Aid acid test or something. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so Warner Brothers supposedly sees the interview and asks this guy to be the rock doc on their sequel to Woodstock, which promotes peyote with the very title Medicine Ball.
And the Grateful Dead are on it too, right?
And of course, the Grateful Dead are on the caravan. So you know, you can see that this is a deep state, kind of promotion activity. It wavy gravy. All of the people who were at Merry Pranksters, the ones that we talked about at Woodstock, organizing that gigantic.
This is sort of a thing with buses back then, because of course you had the Beatles and Magical Mystery Tour and that TV thing with the bus, and of course you have Magic Bus with the Who, and of course you have the Ken Kesey thing, right? And so this was kind of like the thing then, to drive around in a bus.
The bus was a thing you could travel around, have an alternative lifestyle, and take drugs and subtract yourself from productive civilization, and it was supposed to be hip. So he's on this. So he gets on this.
The Partridge Family had a bus. Remember,
everyone had a bus.
I'm sorry.
So there's this ludicrous story, which the fact that he comes from MK Ultra, makes it clear that Brilliant is a lifetime actor. That he's been he was recruited by Lowenstein at Wayne State. They were a joint kind of radical doctor who was trying to even promote this concept there. And then when he comes to San Francisco, the very first thing, they get him to work with the Indians. And Warner Brothers supposedly just amazingly sees it and decides that he's the one for this movie. And now he's on the bus with the Grateful Dead and the rest of the Masonic cesspool rock and roll stars. But now it's where it goes into vaccinations. And this is like, in my opinion, is the expose of Brilliant's, kind of his transition now into promoter of vaccines is really critical for people to understand. Because this is his claim is, because remember, he's traveling around India. The movie ends, but the buses decide that they're going to keep traveling around. He's sort of trying to find himself, but ends up in India with a guru. And now this is how he transitions from being the rock doc to the vax doc. And he claims that he was in the mountains, had lost himself, but came across a guru, Maharaji, and he says that he was guiding him, and Maharaji had a vision. Now, this is actually Brilliant's own. He said Maharaji had a vision, and then he came to Brilliant and says, I need you to go and to eradicate smallpox using vaccines. now Brilliant says,
wait, is this science?
Yeah, this is science, buddy. And he says now so brilliant in his autobiography, says, I can't explain how he even knew the word smallpox or eradicate in English, being let alone vaccination. But so this is, again, you know, when the Lifetime actors make transitions into, you know, kind of their public persona, there's always opportunities there for citizens to do analysis and find them tripping themselves up, because since the stories are not real, there's always, you know, the possibility that they'll have to basically create, you know, fantasy to make it believable, or at least to give some explanation. And the fact is here, this is just obvious, right? You know, you've got this idea of a guru and a mountain, kind of like Helen Blavatsky, right, as to how she started, you know. Anyway, so you've got this guru, he has a vision, and then now Larry just picks it up and he goes, okay, you're right, I'm going to do it. So he goes now armed with this, position from the guru, and he says, he joins the World Health Organization, and he becomes part of the team that supposedly eradicates smallpox. So this whole process, the process from, you know, like Wayne State with the MK Ultra doctor to the fake medicine ball, you know, kind of introduction that Warner Brothers has of him, now to the guru has a vision on a mountaintop who doesn't know even the word eradicate smallpox or vaccination, but tells Brilliant he's got to go to the World Health Organization and try to promote vaccination. So what you have here is just a straightforward cover story to get this guy established as someone that the baby boomer who is suffering from the, you know, the intellectual debasement of the counterculture will accept as a vaccine guru. That's what they've done here. They've made him basically, and it shows how long the project to get the vaccine in place, you know, to wipe us out, how long this project has gone on, right? Because this is you're talking about something happening in the 70s to set Brilliant up as this a kind of a mystical vaccine guru, right? You know, that's kind of how I would characterize him. And we're supposed to believe what he says. And now when you go forward and you look at his participation in the movie, which is just foreshadowing of our current situation. And moreover, what I think more importantly is the TED Talk he gave, which is also in that documentary, which I highly recommend everyone watch. Great documentary. In the TED Talk, he talks about building the technologic slave state. Mm-hmm. He talks about, you know, I need help to create this AI, this, you know, universal scanning of all human activity so we can pinpoint epidemics and then vaccinate the heck out of them before they get going. So this is what Brilliant was created for, basically, was to, when you entered into this moment we're in now, is to be this guy with a seductive and mystical and successful, because remember, he supposedly was part of this thing to wipe out smallpox, background in vaccinations. And now with our current situation, we're just supposed to say, oh my gosh, Larry Brilliant is advocating it, so it must be a good idea. Let's just take the jab.
Yeah, because of his background, his history, yeah. His street cred, if you will, of being this crusading, you know, do-gooder, eradicating disease. Now, if you actually do the history of that, it's very problematic whether these things are actually eradicated. This is true with measles, smallpox, even polio, how they just sort of redefined these things. And of course, the suppression of symptoms is not eradication of the disease. The pathology will manifest itself in other ways, which might be the long-term illnesses that we're afflicted with today. Because the pox that is expressed is actually the body getting rid of the toxins. And if you suppress that, it goes elsewhere and it might cause internal organ problems or long-term health problems that, you know, that so afflict the vaccinated world today. And also the fact that, you know, we've talked about this before, sort of the whole narrative of vaccines, which a large section of the public has accepted. It's sustained a lot of damage recently because of the information revolution. But we do know, if you just look at the charts, that the sharp decline in morbidity and mortality with these diseases occurred before the introduction of vaccines. And, of course, the introduction of mass vaccinations has also coincided with the explosion in cases of autism, long-term illnesses, immunodisorders, immunological disorders, autoimmune disorders, which you'd think might occur with, the poisons they're injecting into you directly, into the muscle tissue. But this whole narrative that, you know, most people just think that smallpox vaccinations got rid of smallpox. It didn't. They just redefined it, and now they call it monkeypox or something. They call it measles or something. But we also saw that with polio, where now they don't call it polio. They call it, you know, acute flaccid, muscle disorder or something, or
paralysis.
I'm sorry, acute paralysis disorder or something. They just call it something else.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of fraud, a lot of misinformation going on there. It's built one. It's sort of this plinth of lies that is built upon. But this goes back to that whole idea of the germ theory, where it's a war model, where it's not about improving nutrition, public health, sanitation, maybe addressing social problems. It's about syringes and very profitable drugs that you can, and at the same time, you can weaponize those drugs to carry out the misanthropic agenda that's lying underneath the philanthropy, the philanthropist agenda that we're given, the idea of sterilization, which can be done at the end of a needle, and also the depopulation and sort of the dysgenic agenda that we see with these global elitists that pretend to want to save humanity.
Yeah, I would point out that the whole origin of vaccination, stems from Jenner. Mm-hmm. He was a high level Freemason, and he was the physician to the king. Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with the very highest level of Freemasonry, the most evil aspect of it. This isn't a group that is looking to promote the health of anybody. They are looking for ways to control and enslave the population underneath them. This is where vaccines come from.
And it's very crude. If you look at the history of it, scraping, taking a skin, scraping and swapping pus, cow pus on it,
frankly, it was kind of ludicrous. I mean, there is a kind of logic to the idea of a little bit of the disease will be, produce the antibody. I mean, you can at least make a logical case, but the idea that there was originally science in back of it is ridiculous. And then when you look at the charts of, the decline in morbidity to the different diseases before the introduction of the vaccines, there's no real evidence that the vaccine actually contributed to any of the ending of, or very little evidence. So what you've got is, in my opinion, is you've got the Masonic idea of being able to get inside the body of the population is really what vaccines represents. This is what it really is. They have been looking for 1,000 years for a way to control the population. And if you look at Huxley's book, which describes the triumph of Freemasonry, you've got intellectual stratification. And so this is, I think, really what is the most clear understanding of the situation we're in now, is that vaccines are sort of like the moon landing, or the origins of the counterculture. I mean, this is just a mind control element that has been put into our culture. That vaccines are reasonable, they're good, they're safe, they're effective, but they're none of these things. And the real reason for them, therefore, is malevolent. It's the real reason for them is that they wanted an excuse to get underneath our skin so they would eventually be able to inject some technologic element that could create the intellectual stratification. So that's why when you think about this RNA and DNA type vaccines that they're developing, I mean, to me, it's just self-evident. I mean, this is what they're for. They're there to change the DNA and RNA to the extent that they're going to basically produce massive autism or dumbing down of the population, and probably even more sterility, less population to worry about. But it's just 100% malevolent. And when you look at the if you trace Larry Brilliant from the Wayne State MK Ultra days and Loewinger, his mentor, into the fake story about, you know, the his participation with the Alcatraz Indian uprising and how Warner Brothers got him, and then this insane, you know, mystical vision that the guru gives him about being a vax, you know, savior in India. I mean, this is preposterous. These are crude elements of a lifetime actor, and it should just be infuriating to anyone who looks at that to see how integral he is in our current moment.
Yeah, I mean, and he's advocating the measures.
More than Gates, more than even Bill Gates is Johnny come lately. It's Brilliant who is really the Johnny Appleseed of, you know, let's vaccinate everybody. I mean, he and if you go back to the TED Talk he gave 15 years ago, which is, you know, they have clips from in the video that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is equating mass vaccination vis-a-vis a technologic slave state. Now you've got 5G, you've got the iPhone, you've got contact tracing, and of course the vaccine is waiting for us, you know, a year out or something. Well, his vision is now in place, right? It's coming to pass. And so when we expose him, we expose the malevolence, we show the obvious fake trajectory to create him as a media personality to seduce people into, you know, the appropriateness of vaccine use. Well, I mean, this should be like the final straw for everyone to say, you know what, no more, no mandatory vaccine, no vaccinations at all. We can't trust medical science at this point. It is completely compromised. It's basically doesn't have the capacity to produce real kind of analysis of like long-term effects on these things. It's so controlled by the special interest that, you know, we just have to say no to it and resist with everything we got.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tool for the moment you see public health being used as a pretext or an excuse for any form of social engineering or radical restructuring of society, you should be suspect, because it's not that just there. You see that's no longer politically neutral, and you should look at the forces behind it that are using it. It's the medical profession, the cartel, has been a tool for the oligarchs for more than a century. And the realization that is necessary for understand what's really going on right now and how these experts, these technocrats are being utilized. They're front men, you know, for the oligarchs who want to impose the slave state. It's interesting if you look at this whole idea, again, we've talked about this before, is the notion that we're everywhere threatened by germs, meaning that the traditional claims of individual rights or privileges and immunities we come to expect to exist here, at least here in the West, are now defunct, because we're all bioweapons, and we just can't have those rights anymore. And we can't accept that narrative or that paradigm, because that's a paradigm for slavery. And Larry Brilliant, he advocates that very thing. He's advocating the very policies which are on their face actually bad public health, like social distancing, which again, the origins of which is a 14-year-old girl who received third place in a science fair. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I mean, this is the basis for this, but it's a pretext again for social atomization and slavery under the pretext of a public health emergency in these things. And we've seen that. Well, come on, emergency powers, they exist to be abused. I mean, let's face it. That's, you know, because they're the ones who always cause the emergencies. It's false flag or whatever, or misrepresentation, or a hoax, or an exaggeration of the threat. Never let a crisis go to waste. It's basic politics, and just, you know, it's everyday common sense is you know, most of us understand that people going to politics aren't moral people. They're not trustworthy people. So why would you give them these broad powers? The broad powers they exercise on behalf of the oligarchs, not for us. And it's clear now, because now this crisis has you know, empowered so many wacky commissars and political Hitler wannabes that want to control everything. And by the way, my apologies to Adolf Hitler, because even he never shut the churches. So So, I mean, so it's just one of these. It's clear. It's interesting that you know that in the Devin Stack video, he talks about this this movie Contagion, and he talks about, of course, Larry Brilliant's Jewish background, which is, I don't think can be ignored, the Tikkun Olam. He and how his father was involved in the Jewish agency, the Jewish Relief Fund, and forming Israel, and of course all the chicanery and that was involved in that operation.
Well, and also more importantly to me was the fact that Brilliant was at a very early age B'nai B'rith.
Yeah, B'nai B'rith. Yeah,
B'nai B'rith is the Jewish branch of Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. This is where he met his wife at a high school dance. So he's very early on. He is in Masonic Judaism, and this, I'm sure, is how he was identified to Loewinger at Wayne State, you know, is through this kind of connection. In the video, you know, he talks about one of the other producers of the film who has a background vis-a-vis the Rockefeller Foundation.
Yeah, Mike Schamburg.
Yeah, Schamburg. Of promoting not Jerry Rubin,
Abbie Hoffman.
Abbie Hoffman, right. But what was important, was very interesting, and again, the thinking of this in terms of Brilliant and his background at a young age at B'nai B'rith, is that they have a video of, I think it's Hoffman's sister, talking about how when they were growing up, if they spoke the word Jesus, they would be slapped in the head.
Yes.
and I mean, she wasn't making it up. I mean, it was like, this was the real perspective. And so, you know, and I'm not sure who the audience was, but they were not aghast at this at all. They seemed to think it was kind of a very cool thing. So, and she wasn't presenting it as like trauma, but rather as, you know, proud declaration of who she was. And then they go into quotes by Hoffman where he talks about how to mind control people.
Yep.
Right. I mean, he actually gives examples of how propaganda operates, and he gives one very interesting theatrical example of how he can cow someone down by yelling and screaming. You know, so in other words, you can see the training to control people.
The filmmaker makes the propaganda, and the propaganda becomes reality to the
viewer. Yeah, then it moves right. And of course, this is like really quite ironic, almost, in the sense that now you look at not just the movie Contagion, which, of course, is preparing us to accept our reality, and the players in the reality, like CDC and WHO, is like noble, right? Mm-hmm. The film preconditions us to have that instead of seeing them as agents of evil and mind control. But he also goes into, and I thought this was, you know, we've talked about it, but I think it's something the public should be aware of more, is the zombie films.
Yes.
The zombie films are basically, you know, just operating against our subconscious so that we are terrified of the disease that will spread. And of course, in terms of social distancing, they sure promote social distancing because you need that space between you and the zombie so that he doesn't, you know, eat your brain. So, You
need 6 feet so you can blow his head off.
You can blow his head off, right. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that all of this is operating. You know, you can see it now in hindsight, now that we're here with the technologic slave state getting rolled out. You can see that, you know, these elements weren't accidental. They were all thought out by the same group that is bringing Larry Brilliant into existence, right? You know, the same group that organized him and Paul Loewinger back at Wayne State, the same group that is, you know, has this absurd, you know, explanation as to how Brilliant then is taken on the bus and ends up, you know, with this ridiculous story with the guru. This whole thing is just mind control. All of this, the whole thing, every single aspect of it. And so when you look then at now, these people are promoting the WHO, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and the vaccine that's coming out. You know, this kind of expose should just basically put out a red line in the sand. And that red line is blood. You know, that's what it's going to take to have me go into the slave state. You know, and hopefully it won't just be my blood that's spilled. So, this is the thing, is that the red line is in front of us, Tim. I mean, they are not kidding. This isn't, you know, a dress rehearsal. We're moving into the technologic slave state. They're going to intellectually debase us through some kind of gene therapy. And if we don't stand up against it and fight with everything we have, we're going to lose.
Yeah. The it's interesting in the Devin Stack video, he has a clip of a Larry Brilliant interview. He talks about when they reviewed Contagion at one of these festivals or something, and he said that everyone watched it, and a conservative Republican, well known, says came up to him and said, "Now I know what a pandemic is like."
Right,
so again, the movie is your vision of reality. So when the actual event unfolds, which again, the event itself is almost as fake as the movie with actors and this stuff, but in this time it's being, the world's the stage now. We're all part of it. Yet this movie that was produced almost 10, was made 10 years ago, is going to affect how we see these things. And this is the function of a lot of these movies in general, is that it creates our understanding how a pandemic unfolds. And not only does it, burnish in our minds the responsible government, it empowers government, the CDC, the World Health Organization. These are the heroes, but also how the public is ignorant, it's idiotic. And so they have to be led. There's going to be riots.
In both films, they actually have like a character from basically independent media who's a psychopath.
Yes.
Like Jeff plays him in one of the films where, he's a conspiracy theorist. And he's a conspiracy theorist, and he's keeping the heroic CDC and World Health Organization. Vaccinating squads from operating right with this so you can actually see there, since this is just predictive of conditioning, and you can alert the public, and so they were already back then.
He's creepy. His name's like Crumweed or something.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see that they use these techniques, but the techniques are so ham-handed that they actually, in my opinion, are self-defeating. Because they are easy to see through once you get the context of the whole thing. And now you can, anyone who kind of recognizes the mind control that's going on here should then have the obvious understanding that the vaccination is part of the slave state, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't all just some kind of, just accidentally, promoting vaccine taking for a fake pandemic. I mean, so they are setting us up to have very little mental process to scrutinize whether or not, this is a good idea to take an RNA or DNA-based, genetic transformation vaccine, because we've watched the movie. And the movie, the independent media, he's a psychopath. They're saying that the independent media now is crazy, paranoid white males. And, there's just no reason not to take this gene-altering vaccine. But it's just too ham-handed, in my opinion. I think that from what I can see, hopefully they've really overplayed it. And, I was looking at, they were saying that 25% of the population they believe will refuse mandatory vaccination. But I think it's far higher. I think that if they're putting out that number, I wouldn't be surprised if it's over 50%. And as long as that group resists, absolutely down to everything that they've got physically and mentally, it's going to be hard for them to enact the program.
Yeah, I think as each day goes by, the narrative collapses. So it's a question of timing. But unfortunately, they're doing so much damage to the economy. It's hard to see how it's going to play out politically. I mean, even how do you have an election? This is an election year.
Yeah.
Just in this county itself, they've announced that the pools and water parks should be closed the entire summer over a disease. Mind you, official numbers, those under the age of 65 or healthy, you have a 99% asymptomatic or mild response to. That's insane.
Far, far higher than 99. It's like 99.98 or something. So, so there's no medical or reason to keep young people from interacting. In fact, it's obviously the right thing to do, because since they would be asymptomatic, they would be the natural sort of what's called herd immunity, which then end up protecting the weak and frail. So this is just being done to slave status. You know, the idea is that they're going to hold us underwater. We talked about this like 2 months ago, that the idea was to hold the economy underwater long enough so that it couldn't be revived.
It's not stupidity. I mean, I found it, my county is a sustainable community, meaning it's part of Agenda 21. And so this implementation, it's easy to see how, they could kind of inveigle themselves into the local government to advance the Agenda 21. You know, I mean, obviously, we see the similarities between Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 and how much of the agenda is being carried out because of the pandemic crisis, the pandemic scare.
Sure.
And we see that here now. Now they're going to, again, advance their program, how just sort of the atomization and sort of shutting down of society, the austerity that's being imposed under the guise of a public health crisis, and just normalizing it all. Many respects, but just good examples. Why would, I mean, just look at the number. It makes no sense for these drastic actions to sort of shut down the summer and shut down, these activities, which actually, on balance, make everyone healthier. It doesn't make any sense, because it only doesn't make sense if you presume that there's an actual public health concern here, as opposed to a pretext where it's not. It's a cover for.
I mean, that's why the letter from the Cardinals that you read was so valuable, because there are people, hopefully, that have authority to cut through a lot of people kind of on the fence, right? Mm-hmm. That are sort of wondering, this whole thing is starting not making sense. But the specificity of the letter, I wanted to congratulate them on, because they actually talked about a conspiracy. They had the guts to actually, they didn't use the word, but you could see it was clear enough in the concepts that they were bringing forward that, there's some group that's manipulating all this. And if we don't stand up to them, they're going to win here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a great letter. And that's, will add to hopefully the group of the population, the percent of the population that is tipping and is tipping in the direction of the independent media, because once the skepticism to the lockdown, is in someone's mind, the media itself, I think for the first time for a lot of people, becomes questionable, because they can see there's something wrong. I mean, why, do they have to go to the independent media to get all the understanding of what's taking place around them? You see, so much closer to what's real, that people are starting to question, Wolf Blitzer and Sean Hannity and Rachel Maddox and all of the creatures of the dependent media. And so this is a great moment for independent media expansion and for, skepticism, which once it begins, as we have seen so many times, the propaganda stops working. This is the one great hope we have, is that the control over our minds in general is a thin veneer of propaganda. All it takes to stop, and this is what Bateson understood when he talked about, how to make a more perfected slave state back in World War II, when he was telling the OSS how to control populations going forward. All you need is just to wake up, and then you cannot be fooled. Once you have that much skepticism that you don't trust the person anymore who's bringing you the Brave New World, media concepts. If you don't trust them, the propaganda doesn't work. You keep your mental balance, you keep thinking, and then there's no way they can fool you with, vaccines that are coming to you from people who got visions from Maharajas and the Himalayas, This kind of stuff isn't going to work anymore. So, that's why it's good to see the independent media, stepping up right now. And we'll see, this is the final battle. And I don't know about you, Tim, but I just don't intend for us to lose. I mean, I don't want to be an insect. So time to fight.
Well, the gates of hell shall not prevail. So let's hope for that.
Let's hope so.
Okay, Joe, I'll let you.
Hey, Tim, thank you so much. We'll get them again next week, okay?
Enjoy the holiday weekend. Enjoy the beaches. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.